This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 340 of the Outlander podcast. I am Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
Welcome to episode 424 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Raquel M.
And now, on to our read-along. We will be continuing our An Echo in the Bone read-along with chapter 65, entitled Hat Trick.
October 7, 1777, General Gates says something about the beginning beginning the game. And a British deserter enters the American camp and reports that General Burgoyne was sending out 2,000 men to test the strength of the American army. Among their general chat between the two gens, General Gates said he didn't trust General Arnold. And I wonder, this is me personally, this is not from the book, I wonder if this is the kind of the beginning of the end for him. And Jamie was either present or heard it or heard about it. And he reports this little kerfuffle to Claire. The Brits are about to see about the American troops. So to get, I guess, intelligence of where they are, what their numbers are. But they're also out to forage as William is just standing about. A guy near him is shot. They have no clue where the bullet came from, but as they look out in the distance, they begin to see small groups of rebels. And he thought that they were being surrounded. And William decides to ride to the main camp, but he couldn't because just at that moment, the Brigadier General rode onto the field. And of course, that's Brigadier General Simon Fraser. Jamie, with the rifleman, Morgan's rifleman, they're riding out, and he is one of those Americans or American troops that William had seen as he was looking around. And he also sees General Simon Fraser on his horse entering the area. The general's aides were trying to shield him, trying to get him to leave the area, but he ignored them. He's like, nope, I'm me. And then General Arnold, the one we all hate, comes crashing through the area, sees the general, then yells at people, shoot me a general, shoot him now. And Daniel Morgan ain't happy about this because, I mean, he's got his men. And yes, the General Arnold is like maybe higher rank than him, but it was a little tense or a lot tense. He was not happy that Arnold came through and essentially took over. But because they're being yelled at and given command to do this, Jamie's like, fine. And he sights his rifle and he purposely shoots far off so that he doesn't kill anyone. But he may not have killed, and he did not. He didn't land anywhere. But his shot was maybe a little bit too good because he definitely missed Fraser, but he shot the hat off of someone who was next to Fraser. And we learned later who that was. But that was funny, not funny, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, unfortunately, someone does shoot General Fraser. General Arnold is euphoric. He takes off, telling others to follow him.
And for anyone confused, it's Simon Fraser.
Yes.
Not James Fraser. Just in case anyone was
Jamie's
confused.
Not a general yet.
No, who knows? He moves. Every chapter he gets a new promotion, doesn't he?
No, he's still a colonel.
Fine.
Arnold takes off telling others to follow him. Jamie does not want to. But Daniel Morgan tells him, look, he will likely be court-martialed over what happened and maybe what will happen. We need witnesses. Follow him. Okay. So he does. They end up in a spot just past or at the, I think it's called the redoubt. I cannot tell you what that is. I did not look it up, but it's an area from behind or from where they fight or shoot.
It's like the people up on the, isn't it like the people who are up on the hill watching the fight?
Maybe.
But they're not participating in it.
Oh, that I don't know. But they get to the area and the fighting continues. Jamie gets into a tumble. He's not shot, but he basically injures himself in every possible way that doesn't puncture the skin or get shot. He like pulls muscles, maybe cracks a bone, like tendons are popping and crack. Like Diana describes, everything is wrong. And he's like, what, in his 50s, early 60s? So he's an older gentleman. He's an older distinguished gentleman. But he's not shot and he doesn't bleed. He's already, like, his wounded hand is where the finger's gone. You know, obviously that's bleeding, but that was already a wound. So he gets into this fight with some Hessians. And after the skirmish, Jamie sees that General Arnold had been shot in the leg. It wasn't fatal, but it's kind of sad. I don't feel that sad, but it is kind of sad. When Jamie goes over to Arnold and makes sure, you know, that he's okay, Arnold's like, how bad am I shot? Where is it? And Jamie's like, it's your leg. And he's like, I wish I had been shot in the heart. I think that's what he says. So that makes me wonder. I am not defending this dude at all in the story or historically. It does make me wonder, though, I have not read, other than what's been, you know, taught to us in history and what reported in this book, that kind of thing, I have not read anything definitive or descriptive. I have not gone out of my way to find anything to read about Benedict Arnold. This actually makes me curious. Not that I agree with what happened in any way. However, the fact that he is basically saying, I wish I had been killed, it makes me, to me, that immediately, what is the first word that comes to your mind, Sam? If someone has language like that.
Suicidal.
I wish I were dead. Well, yeah, but what does that usually tell you?
They're suicidal. They want to kill themselves. They want to die. What? I don't have another word for that.
What leads to that?
Depression.
Yes. So the first thing I thought was, oh, he's not just an asshole or a dangerous person. Like, I think that's, you know, pretty unequivocal. But his response to not being killed, to me, is almost like the reason he said that is like, oh, because if I had been, so this is what I extrapolated from that, and I could be wrong. I wish I had been killed because if I had been killed, I wouldn't have to do what I feel I have to do, or I wouldn't have to maybe take the dangerous step that I feel I have to, or I wouldn't have to be around these people I can't stand. You know, basically the decision to turn coat would be taken away from me. You know what I mean? But because he's not killed, he still is battling with his conscience. But because his life wasn't taken, he's still alive and exists to battle with his conscience, whatever battle is going on. But I'd be curious to know, in any write-up of him, description of him, biography of him, whatever, if not just just the facts were given, like he turned coat, he did this, he went off to England in the end. We learned that a few chapters earlier. John André, his compatriot, his person who was in it with him, like was hanged, I believe, but Arnold got away. He got to England. So that makes me think that there was plenty of time still for his life in England, right? For someone to follow him or someone to write about him or for him to do things or talk about things. I'm just curious. I wonder if in any of the writings about him, yes, they're going to be critical and they should be. I'm curious if there are any writings that describe, maybe that's where Diana got it. I have no idea. But I wonder if there are any writings that describe his sense, his mental state. Was he, you know, depressed? And something else that is that I did not write down because it wasn't a thing that happened. It was just an observation. But I don't know if it was Jamie or someone else, but there was this smell of rum about him. So he had been drinking. And the comment was something like, well, it didn't really matter. They were like, oh, I wonder why that's why he's so like this today. Like, shoot me a general, like acting, you know, oddball. And then they, after that, later on, someone smells the alcohol. And then the thoughts that Diana is writing I wonder, you know, how much of his current behavior is attributable to the alcohol. And then the next thought was, well, you really don't get a great... You don't get great behavior from Arnold, whether he's drunk or not. So it probably didn't matter. But being inebriated on a battlefield where a wrong step or a wrong choice or lack of paying attention can get you killed, can be exacerbated, or, you know, your senses are muted a bit when you're or dampened a bit when you're drunk or someone inebriated. And your inhibitions, obviously, are your inhibitions and your what else? Your inhibitions are muted or gone, lessened. And also So you could be more impulsive, right? And you don't have to know a lot about impulsivity or any kind of mental health issue to be able to read the account of that chapter and say, at least according to Diana's fictional writing, he absolutely was acting impulsively. Right?
Yes. And that was chapter 65. Moving along to chapter 66, entitled Deathbed.
A British ensign enters the American camp under a flag of truce. General Fraser had learned, the one who was shot, Simon, the British one, the one fighting on the British side, had learned of Jamie's presence, his kinsman, and wanted to see him before it was too late. Of course, Jamie would go and Claire would go with him. Claire quickly sees, once they get there, that although she brought her little medical box with her, like, yeah, that's cute. Even she thought, yeah, that's cute of me. There's nothing she could have done. She could smell in the air. He had already gone to fever. She could smell in the air. She did not say gangrene, but she could smell the putrefaction. Is that the right? Putrefaction. One of those words is correct. Of his body, basically. And she tells Jamie he does not have long. If you want to talk to him, this needs to be now. So Jamie's called forward. He kneels next to the general and he speaks to him in Gaelic. Across from Jamie, kneeling on the other side of the general, is a young officer. Claire, who is looking on, notices this other young officer, his long straight nose and his blue slanted eyes. And she has like a, not out of body experience, but a come to Jesus like, holy crap, Jamie, keep your head down, please. Do not look up. Right? It is William who is kneeling across from Jamie. Over the body of, or either side of the body of, I guess you can't say body. He's still alive. It's still his body, but across on either side of General Fraser. Someone calls William away in order to give Jamie a private moment with him. So that was helpful. Jamie, the Simon, General Simon Fraser basically asks Jamie for a favor. He promises to tell all of the general's family in Scotland his wishes, like what happened, and pass along anything the general wants him to. The air is so stifling that and we're not in a tent, we're actually in like a wooden or some kind of house. It's actually a house, a built home, brick and mortar. The air is so stifling, Claire goes outside. As Jamie and others come out a few minutes later, she hears one of the doctors say, see you a bit later then, Dr. Rawlings. Mm. And then she cannot stop herself and she blurts out, Dr. Rawlings? And the man who had been spoken to, turns around and looks at her. And she's like, I'm so sorry. I used to know a Dr. Rawlings. And she's like, his name was Daniel. And the man says, yes, that's my brother. Where is he? Where did you see him?
Boy.
And she's like, I hate to tell you, but he is passed.
Want a skull? I know where it is.
She, a few other parts of him too. She won't, she said, she will tell him all about it. Now is not the time. Let's chat later. You know, if you can, or now that this part's done and the truce is kind of on, you know, when you can make your way safely to our camp, I will tell you all what happened, all of everything I know. She pulls him away and digs into her little medical kit. And she carries with her. Remember in that whole fire thing? Yeah. They lost almost everything, right? Practically everything. But one of the small things, and Dr. Rawlings' book did burn mostly, but she was able to salvage a page from it. It had like singed edges, but she pulls the page out that she carries with her. Of her medical kit, and she shows it to the other Dr. Rawlings. She gives it to him and says, this is from his book. And the guy's like, oh my gosh, did he burn to death? And she's like, no. Come later, we will chat, my dear. It's not going to happen here. Mm-hmm. And she leaves him with the page. So that was very nice. Before Jamie and Claire leave, Jamie's like, you know, he's pulled his hat down low. So like, he's covering himself up as much as he can. And Jamie and Claire are walking out of the area. And William, others, everyone else had come out of the room too, out of the building. And someone says to William, like kind of remonstrates him and says, where's your hat, young man? Like, you know, you're irresponsible. Implying his he was irresponsible for losing part of his uniform. And he's like, it was, shot off my head.
Sorry about that.
By some rebel
Sorry
horse.
About that.
By some rebel horse.
Next
son.
Time I'll return their bullet and get my hat. What?
Exactly. It's like, so then we, Diana brings it together thusly, like, oh, so now we know the person who's had the Jamian had shot off his head. And so William tells his people, oh, sorry. I just skipped a whole line. So William is remonstrated for, where's your hat? Like, you know, for losing part of his mm-hmm. uniform. And Jamie immediately, like, really quickly walks, like, head kind of down, walks over to William, places his own hat on William's head, and then turns and grabs Claire and hauls ass.
He's like, bye!
Walking. They're not running, but they're moving their ass. And William tells his people, quote, evidently, Colonel Fraser was the rebel whore's son who deprived me of my hat. And we also learn, as he does, that he has just been, speaking of promotion, he's now Captain Ransom and not Lieutenant. The dying general had wanted William to be promoted before this
he's
day.
He's just like his daddy.
And he had signed it.
Just always kind of, getting promotions he didn't really want.
Yeah.
But did it anyway.
In a manner of speaking, yes.
And that was chapter 66. Moving right along to the longest chapter we'll be reviewing today, which is 67, entitled Greasier Than Grease.
2 days later, the other Dr. Rawlings is finally able to make his way into Claire's camp, and she tells him everything she knows about the story of her Dr. Rawlings. Then they find out the terms of surrender. Where she finds out that terms of surrender must be negotiated. It's not just like, I surrender. Cool. Let's pause. No, she finds out it must be negotiated, and it can be heck along. It can take days, weeks. She also finds out from this new Dr. Rawlings that they had been identical twins. So not only was she having memories of, even though she never knew the original Dr. Rawlings, she was having, you know, flashbacks to all of this time. Well, she, you know, knew what happened to him, seen his body, that kind of thing, and used his books and learned from him, right? But now it's almost like looking at a dead person, because she finds out that this Dr. Rawlings was his identical
twin. Oh, man.
So they were identical twins. How freaky deek is that? He's like, look, while I'm here, you know, I've got all the instruments I need. I have doubles of some. Is there anything that I could, you know, lend you, or not lend you, give you, you know, that I have extra of? And she's like, I don't know. And she's looking through his stuff. And then
could you imagine if she was just like, I know what your bones look like on the inside of your face. She would be real creepy. I don't think he would be a repeat visitor.
She realizes, you know what? Sure, let's. I can use some tweezers. So he gives her some tweezers, and she's looking at his stuff. And she's like, "Oh, what is that thing? I've never seen anything like that." And he like comes kind of red and embarrassed, and he's like, "I did not write down the actual word, but it's a penis clamp type thing." And she's like, "Huh?" And he's like, "Oh, it prevents morning wood or
does
nighttime
it though?
Livers, something like that."
I don't think it does.
Don't ask me. I don't even have one of those things. I can't talk about that. The whole negotiating the truce, mm-hmm. the surrender thing, it took a week. And they were still negotiating. This thing takes time. So basically they're going on for a week. You know, she's the good thing about it taking a week is that she's like, she has not in the past few months, maybe in the past six, I don't know how long, since they left New Bern or wherever they were with Ferguson fam. Definitely since they left there, they haven't stayed in one place too long. Well, at least in the last month or so, they've been moving, right? Ever since they had to evacuate, they've been moving. And she's like, I'm finally able to like do my laundry. Because hang it up, because I'm not having to like wear it and like wash, spit shine on the go, or spot clean on the go. So yeah, so they're hanging out basically. They're living, they're eating, they're tending to the wounded. They're ready to go on like mentally, but they and they're working physically, but they can't do anything until everything is negotiated. So they're just living their life, waiting on the thing. And one evening, or throughout, I don't know if it was over more than one day, I don't know that Diana tells us, but on more than one occasion, as she's going about her day or days, Claire notices that there's this man on the outskirts of camp. I don't think on the outskirts of camp, although it may be. I may have misread that. If not the outskirts of camp, the outskirts of her area. And I don't mean her genitals. I mean, sure? The outskirts of her.
Because it sounded like what you meant.
No. Her area, meaning like he's not 10 feet away. But he's close enough for her to notice him and see him consistently. And he kind of like comes in and then she'll see him and then he'll like, you know, leave. He'll F off somewhere. Well, he's basically, I'll say spying on her, although I guess he's gathering intelligence about her in that, like, what are her patterns? Where is she at? He's definitely waiting for her to be alone, which she may have been a lot of the time, but he's getting his ducks in a row for some reason. So he finally comes to talk to her personally. So she has this, I think it's at night. She is alone and it's at their fire. But I believe it's dark or almost dark. So she immediately gets the ick, right? Well, the ick's probably different. She immediately feels ick. Her gut is telling her this is no bueno. This is not a good guy. This is not a good situation. And he won't give his name. He won't say who he is. And he says, quote, "Your husband is James Fraser," unquote. And she's like, I don't want to answer him. She excuses herself and just walks away. And she takes the soup off the soup pot, the iron pot, I'm guessing, off the fire and puts it on the ground. So it doesn't overcook, I guess. And then she leaves because food's expensive. You know, food is not rare, but it's hard to come. It can be hard to come by. You don't waste food is my point. So she puts it over and so it can keep bubbling or whatever, but not overcook. And she walks away. She joins another group or family or fire group. And young Ian finds her and asks, "Hey, Auntie, who is that?" She's like, "I don't know." And Ian is watching their fire, the one that she just left. And he's like, "Well, he just spit in your soup and walked away." And I'm like, that's enough. That's just disgusting. Like, yeah, you should not threaten people with anything or blackmail or anything or harm them. But that is like, I'm not kidding when I say in today's, at least in the US, I don't know where else in the world, although I'm pretty sure it's not dissimilar. That's assault. It's like during COVID, and even now, if you did it, you know, people like in stores, people would like rip other people's masks off and cough in their face. Mm. That is assault. Yeah. I mean, you don't even have to touch them the moment you hit them or cause physical injury, like with your part of your body, that's battery. But you can assault without even touching them. I learned that over the last few years, like, oh man, I need to be more educated or aware of these things. But yeah, spitting in someone's soup, that's assault. So anyway, he's saying, "Oh, he just spit in your soup." And she's like, "That's disgusting." And the guy walks away. Ian's like, "Oh, don't worry, he'll be back." Ian's like, "I know these, not that, I don't know him, but I know these types of people who are troublemakers. They have a reason they're there. And until he fulfills that reason, he will not leave you alone." So she's like, "I ain't going back to my camp. I'm going to go by the medical area to see about helping out if I can help doctor." And one dude needs grease for his booty.
The greasiest of greases?
I do not know that. I think it is hard back there. He has a hard time. I'm guessing he's constipated because it hurts coming out.
He could have a hemorrhoid.
I mean, that's true. That's true. That's
or
true.
A fissure.
Anything, that's true.
Just got something not doing so great with his bum hole.
Well, yeah, whatever it is, grease does not alleviate pain. Grease alleviates flow.
Well,
alleviates, excuse me. No, it helps flow.
Yeah, it not only helps flow, but it also kind of lubes the whole tract up.
Lubes, there you go. Grease lubes. It does not soothe. The use of grease that provides lube so something can move slickly through it, the effect can be alleviation or avoidance of pain, absolutely. But just putting grease on something does not take away pain, right? It's not a pain reliever.
I don't know. Have you tried that blue emu oil or lotion?
On my booty? So
anywhere. I'm just saying that's really refreshing.
I've never tried it. No, I've heard of it. I haven't tried it. Is it like wintergreen, kind of like icy hot?
It's blue. I don't think it smells like much of anything, but it's like a, they use it for like arthritis and stuff. It's got like emu oil in it. And I mean, when my hands are hurting, it feels really good.
Do you have arthritis hands kind of?
I don't know yet. I got to find out. I believe I have a lot of stretchy joints, so I'm going to make them test me for hypermobility.
So she chats with Denny and she's like, this thing. And then she goes off to find some grease for this dude's booty. The first thing she's able to get is some possum fat but it is liquefied. It's still hot. And she's walking back to bring the liquefied possum fat for grease to the medical area for the dude who needs it for his booty. But because it is in the dark, she becomes a little bit disoriented, and she either runs into something, like not her body, but her feet. She either trips on something or whatever, but she spills the grease, and then she's startled by an owl who's flying close and really close to her face, and all the noises in the dark, because she's basically near a forest, or they're near a forest anyway, out on the outskirts of the camp, and she's freaked out by all these noises, and of course her PTSD flares. So remember, her PTSD is from her abduction and rape, right? And that was in book 6. Like I said, and I cannot say, and this is not a spoiler because you guys already know what happened. She was abducted and raped. I have said in the past that this PTSD, not randomly, but or maybe randomly, that occurs, like a flare, if you will, these flashbacks. Yeah, they're obviously brought on by condition, brought on by stress, maybe, who knows, for her. But they continue as late as book 8, because I remember the next book, specifically where it happens or how it happens or whatever. I don't know, even though it's one we've read, I don't know if it happens in book 9. I'd have to, even though I've read it several times, I couldn't tell you where it is. But my point is this one time event, although no one's arguing its effects don't last, because obviously they have. But this one time event in book 6 is still very much, very much with her. In her mind, she is back in the forest after the abduction. And then she drops to the ground, curls up in a ball. And I mean, she's feeling the things that happened to her. She's feeling the rag or whatever it was that they stuffed down her throat, covered her mouth. Like, she's like salivating, and she bites her lip so hard that she rips it open. It bleeds. And she's like drooling blood and saliva when she not comes to, because she doesn't, pass out, but when she comes out of this,
so
this,
like,
PTSD,
when she comes
flashback,
back to,
right?
Herself.
Exactly. When it subsides some, and she can like stand up, when she can be more herself, quote unquote, normal, that I hate the word normal, but you know what I mean? When she comes out of it slowly, she realizes that she's like, drooling blood and saliva. And she's like, okay, yeah, I gotta get back to camp, because me out here is not great. She hears a man nearby, or some noises. And then I think she thinks it might be the Indians or something. And I don't think exactly find out what it is, but she hears what sounds like a man going absolutely ape shiz over something, screaming. And then suddenly Ian's there. He finds her and he leads her back to their fire. And then Ian went around. She tells him what she was doing and that she lost the grease. And Ian went around to different fires begging grease to collect enough for her to take.
Lisa, can I have some more?
Can I have some more for the butt of this dude over there? Of this dude's butt.
Did you just turn German?
And as he's walking around doing his thing, he realizes he misses Bree, because there's so much he can say to her that he can't say to anyone else. And he likes to think that it's the same for her, or it was the same for her. He brings the grease back to Claire. He takes the grease to the hunter's tent, and he gives it to Rachel, and it drops. They both bend over to pick it up, and he puts his hand on her face and kisses her, and she slaps him. She says, "Thee must not." And he responds in Gaelic because he's like having all of his languages. He's Twitter-pated. This is Twitter-patient, right? Everything bangs into his head at once and he's not differentiating what. He's not mixing up languages. He's going from language to language to language, but he's not mixing them like saying half German, half Gaelic, half Mohawk. No, he calls her my heart in Gaelic. And then Mohawk comes to him, although we don't get the words he says. And then he finally, in English, apologizes to her. He reaches out a hand and she takes it. And there's a little bit of more conversation and a little less action. What, how does that go, Sam?
A little less conversation, a little more action.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what they want. But she stops them and that's great. But I mean, they almost knock boots, but he actually stops them. Now, I think if they had gotten further, she absolutely would have stopped them. But he definitely, they both would have stopped it. But my point is he wants to, and he's able to kind of gain control over himself, etc. So he leaves. And after he takes off, she realizes that Rollo was still there and he had licked up all the grease that hadn't been liquefied. So attempt number two to get grease has now failed.
Yeah.
That's why this chapter is called Greasier Than Grease. So the universe is determined to keep that grease, any grease, from the doctors that night, or from the dude's booty. I don't know. Rachel wonders what she'll do with regard to Ian. She's at least in like with him and definitely in lust. She's not talking the other L word yet, but she knows there's something there. And Denny shows up to their tent and she immediately says, please pray for me because I'm in danger. And he agrees. But then once he realizes what's going on, he's like, yeah, prayer may not, like, I have trust in God. I have more trust in God than I not trust. I have more faith in God than I have in you, Rachel. I will pray for you. But, You better like watch yourself because he is not good for you. You know, he lives in violence, all of this. But yeah, it's pretty clear. If she didn't know, if we didn't know by the end of this convo, she's in love with him. Ian, not her brother.
Yes.
She asks Denny if he'd ever been in love. And he is he's not evasive. He just doesn't give a lot of detail. He goes, yeah, in England, but it wouldn't have worked out. She was not a friend. And then, and this, I read it and I laughed. I was like, is that what I think he just said? And I read it again slowly and I guffawed. I was like, that was like, I laughed loudly. That was great. This is, Diana's funny. She can be very funny. She writes great humor. But this, I would have spit out my drink if I had a drink in my mouth. Rachel says, quote, I'm sorry about the grease for someone's arsehole. Excuse me. For someone's arsehole, friend Murray said. The dog ate it. And Denny says, the dog ate. Oh, the dog ate the grease. Do you not get it?
Apparently not.
Okay, I'll read it again. I'm sorry about the grease for someone's arsehole, friend Murray said. The dog ate it. So she's sorry that the grease is gone. The dog ate it. The grease that was for someone's asshole,
correct,
is gone. The dog ate it.
Right.
And Denny goes, the dog ate. Oh, the dog ate the grease. The dog did not eat the asshole.
Did he think that's what he thought she was saying?
Yes, because that's exactly the language. She says, I'm sorry about the grease, ... for someone's arsehole. Sorry, for someone's arsehole, friend Murray said. So Ian says the grease was for someone's asshole, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm sorry about the grease. For someone's arsehole, friend Murray said. The dog ate it.
Yeah, I still would have would have connected the dog with the grease.
Okay, maybe in type it's closer. Not geographically, like spatially. Physically closer. Well, the last thing she said is someone's arsehole, not grease. And then she follows it up with the dog ate it. So the implication is the dog ate the asshole. But then he realizes that does not make sense. That's why he says the dog ate. Oh, the dog ate the grease. And I guffawed. I thought I never laughed at that before. So I must have not caught it either. But now I did. Denny asks Rachel if she wants him to speak with Murray. And he says, stay away. I can speak with him and tell him to stay away if that's what you want. Or I can assure him of that your affection is only friendly. And she says, quote, are those the only alternatives? Unquote. He responds that she can't marry someone like him. And then they're out front of the tent, but not in the tent when they had this conversation. And they go back in the tent and they see that someone had slit their tent, the wall of their tent, and stolen their food. So now she has to go beg for some more food for them.
And get some more grease.
And she goes to the grease is gone. So
can I get a side of grease with my more food?
Can I have some food that we don't have? And third time's a charm for the grease. Yes. And she goes to the Fraser's camp to do this.
To hopefully run into Murray.
Oh, who knows?
Is that the end of the chapter? That is chapter 67. Moving along to chapter 68. Is it a French word or an English word?
No, I think it's English.
Because I think it, if I was reading it like I was just reading it, I would say despoiler. But I also look at it and I'm like, but if it's French, it would be like despoilier?
No, lié would be L-I-E-R.
You're right. My glasses aren't great and I couldn't tell where the I was, but I knew there was an I there. Okay. Despoiler.
We are with Claire's POV again. Jamie brings her a gift. He'd won a huge, I almost said octopus. I don't know why. He'd won a huge buffalo robe in gambling, in playing cards. It was big enough for the two of them. He has plans to do all kinds of things to her in that buffalo robe while they're warm. Young Ian shows up at the mention of beer. And they note that young Ian is acting kind of like a half-wit. He's doofy goofy. And Jamie's like, yeah, he's in love. He's got to be. And they're like, I wonder who it could be. It's Rachel. As we already know this. Jamie says, would you like us to have a word with Denny? You know, is there something you want us to talk to him for you? And he thinks, when he asks, like, okay, so you love her. Does she love you? And Ian says, well, I think she does. And they talk about it. And Ian's like, they all agree. Yeah, Ian was not meant to become a Quaker. That ain't going to work. He can handle the Scot and the Mohawk. You ain't going to, both of them have, I'm not saying naturally violent natures, but given their history, right? Meaning the history of both people.
Civilizations.
They don't meld easily, put it that way. All this time when he's talking about this and this and that and kind of going smarmy in the face or in the head, he's fingering Neil Forbes' smoked ear. Like it's going to bring him luck or something.
I don't know where that was going. But
what? The fingering?
Yes. As soon as that word comes out of anybody's mouth, I'm like, where are we going with this? What are you
fingering? Is it appropriate to stay in front of me? I don't need to be part of this conversation. You can talk about that with someone else. And then the creep shows up again. The dude who was basically doing recognizance and then finally came over to Claire when she was alone and then assaulted her soup, right? He's still asking for Jamie. Ian tells Jamie in Gaelic, this is the dude who was around earlier asking for you. He means no good. And the dude, the creep, says he wants to speak with Jamie in private. And he's all,
don't we all?
Nah, we're good. Jamie's like, nah, we're good. And the guy doubles down. He's like, I will only speak to Jamie alone. Fine. Ian steps away, but he doesn't go far. He asks Jamie, this fremder, it is a fremder, but German pops in. I'm sorry. The stranger asks Jamie, does the name Willie Coulter mean anything? And long story short, the day before Culloden, there had been only one witness to Dougal's death besides Claire. Of course, Jamie had killed Dougal. And that one person had been Willie Coulter. Now, this unknown man, this fremder, this stranger, says he was an overseer back at that time. And he had met Willie Coulter at an auction. It was a I want to say a slave auction, but it was an auction of people predominantly, I guess of anyone, because he had been transported like a lot of other people from Ardsmuir, right? Willie had been transported apparently earlier. So he was transported right after Culloden, if I understand, rather than 7 or 10 years later. And when he arrived, he was put amongst enslaved, I'm guessing enslaved Africans. And he was, I'm guessing, bought. Either his indenture was bought or his body was bought. I don't know. But this overseer had seen him there and he met with him and he got his, I say a testimony, that's my word. He got information from him. But he died a few weeks later, like, because someone on the ship had brought, you know, an illness that killed like the whole lot of them. But what did this guy want? So he's obviously, this is blackmail, right? He's like, I know what you did. Why don't you pay me $100 and I'll keep my trap shut. And then Jamie's like, yeah, it never ends there. Like,
no, that's just where it starts.
You want to squeeze me. Exactly. You want to squeeze me for whatever. And he's like, I'm using the wrong word. I don't know the exact term. I did not write it down, but I'm using the word squeeze because effectively it's the same. But he's like, I'm going to pay you now. You're going to keep squeezing me, right? And the guy's like, a little squeezing does every man good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like,
okay, no.
The right squeezing, not this kind.
No, because if it works once, he's going to do it again.
Absolutely. That's why you don't negotiate with terrorists. So,
or older sisters.
What does this guy want? Besides,
Summer. Ginger.
Stop. Ian, I told you he wasn't far. He's watching the whole shadammy whammy. Ian appears out of the darkness and grabs the man from behind and stabs him. And that would be all she wrote, except that there was someone else there. Because this is out in public, right? It's dark, but there are people at their fires. So there's fires maybe, 15, 20 feet from them. Who knows? We don't know. But someone else had been looking at just that moment and sees Ian stab this man. And then he let him go and he falls because he's dead, obviously.
I hate it when that happens.
So Ian takes off. Jamie takes off after Ian, and Claire runs off after Jamie. And as she's running, she runs into Rachel. And it is sheer pandemonium. In the tussle, Rollo is shot, but not dead. And Ian's like, not quite. Well, I guess it's the same. It's the same quandary, right? When they were at Mrs. Bug's funeral and Archbug was like, Ian was like, take my life. And he's like, that's too easy. You didn't kill me. You killed the thing I love the most. Give me your dog. And he's like, but he didn't do anything. And he's like, exactly. So the feeling he had then was somewhat similar to the feeling he's having now, even though he didn't kill anybody. Yes, Ginger, he just did so kill someone again. This time was on purpose. But anyway, when it was Martin, I don't know what his first name was. I don't know if what his rank was, but he was part of the army there. And he's the one who confronts Ian there. There's a crowd gathering and he's the one, I believe, who shot at him and he got Rollo, because of course Rollo is always going to protect Ian. And then he's like, I'm just going to kill this dog. Not necessarily to get after Ian, but because the dog is injured, but he's definitely an arsehole about it, right? He's not doing any favors for anyone, basically. And Rachel goes in front and says, do not kill him. This is an innocent creature. He can be mended. He can be salvaged. He can be tended to. He can be, I guess mended is better. He can be fixed. Healed. And Rachel says, basically, Ian, go. I will look after Rollo. And she tells him to run.
Girl, best not let that boy's dog die. You're never going to hear the end of it.
Exactly.
That was chapter 68. Moving along to chapter 69, entitled Terms of Surrender.
The men, this is after Ian leaves, same scene though, or continuation of the same scene. The men wanted to kill Rollo because of his meaning to Ian. So yeah, it was very similar. Jamie talks to General Gates, who wants a favor. He's like, yeah, could you take General Simon Fraser's body to Scotland for burial? You will be on your nephew, whoever's in your party. You will all be... He's like, sure. How do we get across this blockade? Like, we can't get there safely. And he's like, oh, no, it's all taken care of. The plans are you will be on a British ship. So you will be very safely transported. And so no danger of pirates this time. You'll get there safely. And once you're there, you'll get some money too. They'll pay you. We'll pay you.
That just sounds like a timeshare. Come on.
Oh my goodness. Do this one thing and we'll then October 17th, William is one of the soldiers who are no longer allowed to fight in North America. This according to the terms of surrender. And William is like, he's physically fine, but he's just like done. He needs some peace. And he just wants to, he's not a boy, but he's a young, young man. He's like, what now? 19, maybe 18, 19, 20 ish. And that was his first big old campaign. He just wants to see his father.
Daddy. And wrapping it up with chapter 70 entitled Sanctuary.
Back at Lallybroch in the 1980s with Roger and Bree. We find out that Roger, and this I definitely did not remember. I must have read so quickly before that I just did not retain it. Roger had begun to build that old chapel. I think in the last chapter we were with them, everyone had invited themselves to Lallybroch. Rob Cameron had said, oh, I have a friend who's like a, not an architect, but like an archaeologist type person or anthropologist, whatever. Can he come look at your old buildings and da 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 and just kind of take a look at it? And Roger's like, sure, okay. And Roger had hung out with him, remember, till like 5 o'clock or so there as he was going through, not really excavating, but, you know, like a minor excavation, just going through and studying and trying to see how old that was, the chapel. And so now Roger was apparently inspired to begin to rebuild that old chapel. And he's all in his thoughts and feelings and wonderings. And he's like, what should I be doing? Not with regard to the chapel, just like, is my vocation still there? Should I be doing this Gaelic teaching thing? Like his mind was everywhere. I don't want to say he wasn't at peace, but he definitely wasn't at peace with regard to his vocation or what he should be doing in this new time. And then we're with him in the office, and he sees someone from the corner of his eye, out of the corner of his eye, stop in the doorway. Usually it's Bree or Jem or something. And he looks up like that. This was not one of them. quote, ragged jeans and sweatshirt, dirty blonde hair hacked off and tussled, unquote. It was a stranger to him. He's like, or new to him. This person who had entered his home, like, this is freaky deek. He thought the guy looked familiar, but he couldn't place him. And of course, this having a stranger in your home, like not even knowing how they got in, Roger was quite uneasy, obviously. Yeah. And the man says, and I could have this wrong. He might not be in the office. I think he's actually probably in that old. Yeah, I think I got it wrong. Because he's rebuilding the old chapel, he might be in the chapel right now. But because this makes more sense. Anyway, he's there. He doesn't recognize this man. And the man says, I'm claiming sanctuary, right? Because sanctuary, isn't sanctuary when you go to a church and you walk in and you claim sanctuary and you're supposed to be guaranteed safety.
As long as
peace,
you stay
right?
in the church.
Protection. Yeah. Quote, and then this is coming from the stranger. Quote, and then, Minister dear, I want you to tell me who you are, who I am, and what in the name of God Almighty are we? Unquote. And of course, Diana tells us who it is. It is, what's the guy's name?
Buckley.
Yeah, it is William Buckley McKenzie.
Sorry, I did just try to kill you a few years ago. I didn't realize that you were my...
But you're fine now. You
right.
lived, so...
So we're just going to get over it. It's fine. No big deal.
And now, exactly. And now you're going to help
me.
Hey,
y'all. All right. That was chapter 70. Join us next time and we will be continuing our An Echo in the Bone read-along with part 6 coming home. We will do chapter 71 entitled A State of Conflict, 72, The Feast of All Saints, 73, One Ewe Lamb Returns to the Fold, and chapter 74 entitled 2020.
Again, a special thanks to co-producer Raquel M. To find out more about how you can support us on Patreon, visit outlanderpod.com/Patreon.
And if you're looking to meet new people that like Outlander a lot, please join us in our group. Our website address is www.outlanderpod.com/group.
And if you have an interest in some Outlander Pod branded merch, please visit our shop at www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
And if you haven't subscribed to our newsletter, the Outlander Pod Gazette, please do. You can find out more at outlanderpod.com/newsletter. Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @outlanderpod.